Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, July 30th, 2014, episode 10.05, the AFC North preview show, we'll be taking a look at the Baltimore Ravens, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Cleveland Browns, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'll give you my opinions on Peyton Manning having a little fun in Denver, Joe Thomas going overboard in Cleveland about Brian Hoyer, and Ndamukong Suh having to wait for a new deal, and fantasy football is back, baby. Plus, Richard Graves from Sky Sports News will be joining me to talk NFL news and give his thoughts on the AFC North. But first, let's chomp it in. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. Welcome back, people. Man, training camps are in full swing. It is crazy, already crazy number of injuries that have happened in the first week. Football players going down. San Francisco 49ers losing two running backs, Kendall Hunter and LaMichael James. Cowboys losing another key cog in the defensive scheme. And big money being paid out. Cowboys being one of the teams that dole out some money. But Patrick Peterson of the Arizona Cardinals getting a big payday as well. I'll talk about those contracts with Richard Graves a little later on in the show. But right now, I want to talk to you about fantasy football, baby. It is back. It is loud. And this year, you are going to get 100% of Steven Miranda. That's right. I am talking about myself in the third person because I am ready to bring it. If you played fantasy football with us last year, check your emails. You should have received an email on how to sign up again this year. Or go out to NFLRNR.com or Facebook and Twitter pages. Check out the links for signing up. Bring it. I have made it a goal this year for myself to win more than half the leagues I play in. So if you think you can take me down in fantasy football, head out there, sign up, come out and play against me. I am going to bring it and give you my best. And I guarantee, maybe I shouldn't guarantee. Should I guarantee it? Maybe I won't guarantee it. But I will. I guarantee that I'm going to give it my all, and I will make it my goal to win more than half the league. So if I fill 10 leagues, I will try to win 6 or more. If I only fill 8, I'll try and win 5 or more. You get the deal. Come out and play fantasy football. It's going to be big. It's going to be huge. ESPN's doing some cool stuff to the site, and I'm excited about it. I can't wait. I'm putting cheat sheets together already. No, you cannot have my cheat sheets because I don't want you to cheat off me when we draft because I plan to win a lot this year. So that's right. Fantasy football on ESPN, you're going up against me. Two different prize ranges. One where you could win one of the really cool hoodies that I have available, and then a T-shirt. As always, you can get those autographed or not. It's completely up to you. But first, you have to win, and to win, you have to come out and sign up and play. So if you haven't gotten an email and you feel you should have gotten an email, let me know. But I will be putting the link out available and making it available to everyone starting tomorrow on August 1st. So that's that about the show. Everything else seems to be going pretty good. A little later on, Richard Gravesy, my buddy Richard Graves, is going to be joining me. But right now, I just have to talk about the Cleveland Browns. And more specifically, I'm talking to you, Joe Thomas. Cleveland Browns left tackle Joe Thomas was raving to the Plain Dealer about Brian Hoyer. Now, I don't know what it is. Maybe he just couldn't help himself because HBO Hard Knock cameras are rolling around and there's all the excitement or something. But here's what he said. Thomas said, he's a lot like Tom Brady. When you look at the way he competes and the way he demands the most out of everybody around him, it's no coincidence that those guys play together. Hoyer has a lot of those same mental attributes, and that's a great thing for a quarterback to have. End quote. He also went on to say, he's the ultimate competitor. And no matter if we drafted a quarterback number one overall, I know that in his mind he expects to win the job because he's that type of competitor and he is that type of quarterback. Okay, to which I say to Joe Thomas, come on, man! Are you kidding me? Hoyer has played three freaking games. Yeah, he played really well when he played in those three games. You're going to compare him to Brady? How in the world are you going to compare Brian Hoyer to Tom Brady? I don't even like Tom Brady, and I'm telling you that is ludicrous. That is just simply moronic. Oh, my goodness gracious, Joe Thomas. Chill out. Maybe it is the adrenaline of, you know, the HBO Hard Knocks cameras or something. Don't ever make a statement like that, comparing a guy who's played in three football games to Tom Brady, a guy who's won multiple Super Bowls and has multiple MVPs under his belt. That is just outrageous. Joe Thomas, you win this day's award of, I can't even find it. How horrible is that?
Boob of the day.
That's right. You are boob of the day today for simply comparing someone like Hoyer to Tom Brady. I can't even believe that I'm here defending Tom Brady, but that's what it is. Next up, funny man, Peyton Manning. Now, if you haven't seen this video yet, you got to go out to the website, NFLRNR.com. Check this out. I posted a video of Peyton Manning doing what I guess can only call his white guy funky dance moves to an old Rocky Top song. It's Rocky Top, Rocky Top. It is just shows you how funny and how fun Peyton Manning really is. Everybody knows he's a great quarterback, and I think he is a great quarterback. And when he is done and he retires, I will say, regardless of whether he wins any other Super Bowls or not, the best quarterback to ever play the game. The way he just controls and manages his offense, absolutely nobody like him. Nobody will ever be like him. Peyton Manning is the greatest at the QB position. However, he knows how to have fun. I mean, he's serious, all his get out. We all know his work ethic, and he's the first one in, the last one out, always in the playbooks, always studying film, always wants to know what's the next thing that's coming around the corner. He's always working. But when the guy decides to stop and have fun, he has fun. You got to see this video. He gets other guys dance. He gets Wes Welker to start doing his little white guy funky dance move. So funny video. I give it a hat tip to Peyton Manning right now during training camps, and it's hot and everybody's doing those two-a-days and you're working hard and just trying to prepare for the season to start. He can let off a little steam and do a little funky dance. I don't know if it was a cross between the Margarita or the Funky Chicken or the Chicken Dance from Ed TV with Woody Harrelson. I don't know what he was trying to do, but it's just funny. If you have not seen the video, you don't know what I'm talking about, go out to the website, NFLRNR.com, and check out the video of Peyton Manning dancing. All right, moving on to the Detroit Lions. Ndamukong Suh was talking with the Lions, and his people were talking with the Lions about a new contract. But the Lions have decided to wait until the end of the season before they either give him a new contract or don't give him a new contract. And it looks right now that Ndamukong Suh is going to be able to test the free agent waters. And he most likely is not going to be in Detroit in 2015. That's just speculation, of course. That's just me looking between the lines of what the Lions deciding to not give him a contract now. But this can either do one of two things. It's either going to, A, help the defender get motivated to have a big season this year, or it could be a huge distraction. I'm right now kind of go towards the latter, because even Sue knows that it might become a distraction. And for Ndamukong Suh, who is a distraction, just by you just say the name, Ndamukong Suh, that's a distraction, then you have him asking the media to stop asking questions about his contract talks being tabled for the season. And this is what he said. He said, I would ask you guys to not bother my teammates about something they have nothing involved in. So for sure, I definitely don't want them to have to answer any questions about it. So I'd ask you to not ask them any questions about it and let it be a distraction to our team, as I don't think it will, because it won't be a distraction to me. You know what, Ndamukong? The very fact that you have to go and tell the media to not ask people about it so that is not a distraction is already a distraction. Does that make sense? I hope you followed me there. All right, it's already a distraction by you having to tell the media to not ask your teammates about it. That's already making it a distraction. Now, yeah, I'm sure once you guys get onto the football field, you know, it's I don't know. And then the other thing is you're asking the media to not do something. That's like you asking thing one and thing two from the Cat in the Hat to do something, and then you remember they always did the exact opposite. That's what you're doing. You're asking thing one and thing two to not ask your teammates about your contract. What do you think the first thing the media is going to do? Ask your teammates about your contract and you're not getting one. Oh, man. He just Ndamukong Suh's already a distraction when he stomps on people and gets suspended. Now he's asking the media to not help him be a distraction. It's not working. And I think that you should read between the lines like I am. And the Lions deciding to not give you a contract right now. Let's wait for the season to play out. The way I see it and the way I think this is going, I don't believe that Ndamukong Suh is with the Detroit Lions at the end or at the end of the season. He will have to move on and find a new team. Hey, he'll test the free agent waters. If he goes out and has a great season, which I'm not sure he can have a better season than he had last season. But if he has a great season, goes out, let's say he gets 15 to 20 sacks and, you know, puts up another, you know, 80 to 100 tackles, well, the Lions may have to reconsider. But short of that kind of a performance in 2014, you can best believe that in 2015, Ndamukong Suh will be looking for a new team. Well, I don't have a rant or a rave other than the fact that well, I guess it is kind of a rant, and so here it is. Let me just give it to you. I'm going to rant a little bit on the nonsense that is these crazy limited practices during training camps that teams must adhere to because of the new CBA that they signed just a couple years ago. I think the reason why you're seeing more season-ending injuries to players now is because they are not putting their bodies through the strenuous hits that they have to take on a daily basis when you play in the National Football League. Now, before you had the practices, and the more you practice and the more you hit yourself and the more endurance your body feels those hits and it takes it. And it just, you know, it absorbs it. And the more you do it, the more it says, hey, this is just a part of my life. And it gets stronger and it builds better. And you don't have the injuries. Now, you don't practice as much. You don't get to hit your body as much. You don't get to hit your buddy as much. So he's not getting the endurance. His body's not building the muscle and the stamina it needs to absorb these kind of hits. Then all of a sudden, you go out to practice with full pads for the first time, boom, you get hit, and you blow out an ACL, or you break a foot, or tear your Achilles. It is just crazy how many season-ending injuries are happening the first week of training camp. And I have to believe it is because the bodies of these players are not taking the hits over and over again to kind of like, it's muscle memory, right? Isn't that what they say in sports? You shoot that jumper. It's just you got to shoot it over and over and over again just so that you can train your muscles. This is it. This is it. This is it. This is how I shoot. You know, golf, muscle memory. You take the swing and you finish the same way every time. You get that same stroke. It's muscle memory. It's the same in the National Football League. That muscle memory isn't there. It just the body just doesn't remember, hey, I'm going to be taking these hits. I'm going to be getting these hits, and you don't get ready to absorb the hit like you do when you take it on a daily basis. And that's why I believe some of these players are getting hurt and costing teams their seasons. It's quite amazing that I've already seen 5 season-ending injuries to players, some not as significant as others, but still you got some players that are already going to miss the first month of the season due to injury.
You've had some players that had to go on to the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list for these teams. It's pretty crazy. I think that the NFL is going to have to at some point in the near future, because remember, the CBA is for 10 years. So they got 10 years of labor peace. But if they don't go back and readdress how often these players can practice in full pads, you're just going to start seeing more and more season-ending injuries. I think that's something that the league definitely has to look at and address sooner rather than later. Okay, that rant was brought to you by me just not liking players getting hurt. All right, joining me right now is good friend of the show and my colleague, Richard Graves. What's up, Gravesy?
How's things? Good to hear from you, Steve.
Good to hear from you. I'm shocked kind of right now that you took my call. I thought you might big time me since you get to sit around with the commissioner of the NFL for, you know, half hour or so.
Well, it wasn't quite half an hour, more like quarter of an hour, but I appreciate that. However, I could never ignore you. You wouldn't allow me to. The 17 missed calls I've had in the last 24 hours, you know, sooner or later, you break a man down, Steve.
Oh, that's funny right there. Well, thanks for coming on the show again. I really appreciate lots to talk about. First, real quickly, you did spend, you know, like 15 to 20 minutes there with the commissioner. One-on-one, what was that like, and what does he have to say about the NFL in Europe?
Well, first of all, that was fantastic because obviously the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, very busy man, lots of pressure on his time. So for him to just afford us 15, 16 minutes to serve his time yesterday in London was absolutely fantastic. Of course, he's got a job to do as well, let's not forget, because he needs to push the three games that are going to be played at Wembley this coming season. But I was really impressed by the enthusiasm and the real drive there is behind the NFL now, certainly in his eyes in particular, because we've known for a while, haven't we, that the NFL want to get more games into the UK market. They want to exploit the UK market. They see it as a fan base that is there to be delved into and exploited. But I've got to tell you, the drive, the passion, the energy he showed yesterday when I was chatting to him blew me away. This isn't just a thing that is sort of fly by seat of your pants. He's talking in terms of supply and demand. And on several occasions yesterday, he turned around to me and said, look, the demand for the NFL in the UK is far outstripping what we can supply right now. We are playing catch-up in the NFL. So last year you had two games. This year there's three. Listen, seriously, I would expect him at some point to announce there will be four games at Wembley next year. Anything you can throw in front of him. I said, look, Wembley Stadium is the home of English football. And obviously the England national team play their games there. And this was one of the problems that he sees, that Wembley is booked up on certain weekends. But again, he turned around and said, look, these are issues that are going to be thrown in front of us as stumbling blocks. My job and the NFL's job is to find a way around them and meet the demand in the UK. So
I like
the,
that.
The one thing that
he knows that there's
the one
issues
thing that came loud and clear from the interview was that the NFL are going to keep pushing games at UK fans. And good times are ahead, without a doubt.
Well, that's good news, especially to all of our listeners over there in the UK. That means you get more football. Hopefully you get more teams. Look, I never thought the Dallas Cowboys were going to make the trip to London. They're coming over this year. The more football teams you can put over there in front of people, I think the better.
Well, this is the other thing as well, Steve. He turned around yesterday and said flat out, there are more NFL teams at the moment wanting to come and play games at Wembley Stadium in London than they can accommodate. Now, that surprised me because, you know, if you go back to 2007, the perception was the NFL had a lot of work on its hands just to get two teams to come across the Atlantic to play in London.
It had to coerce teams to go to London.
Exactly. So for him to be saying that right now, that more teams are wanting to come over than the NFL can facilitate, is a massive change in the whole mentality and thinking of the ownership as well, as much as anything else.
All right. Well, I brought you on today to talk about the AFC North. But before we get to those four teams, real quickly in the news, Patrick Peterson of the Arizona Cardinals becoming the highest paid cornerback in the league. What do you say about that?
Yeah, it's a big deal, isn't it? And I think he's worth every penny as well. What we've seen of him playing for the Cardinals so far, he's played on defense, he's played on offense, special teams, punt and kick returns. Now, from what I hear, now that he's signed this deal, he won't be playing on offense or on special teams returning kicks anymore. They're going to use him purely as a cover corner. But he is worth every penny. It certainly stirred the pot, hasn't it? I noticed there's been some comments backward and forward on Twitter between him and Richard Sherman. I'm sure all in the right spirit, but certainly for two games at least next season, there's going to be two players on that field wanting to prove their worth.
All in good fun. But here's what happened. So basically, Richard Sherman, after, of course, Patrick Peterson became the highest paid cornerback, retweeted a comment from a reporter that said that last year between Peterson and Sherman, only 8 touchdown passes were thrown against them. Of course, 7 of those were against Patrick Peterson. To which Patrick Peterson replied, "Why are you mad, bro?" And Sherman said, "Well, can't be all that mad when you have this," and he put a picture of his Super Bowl ring up there on Twitter. So they're having a lot of fun right now. But look, they're the two highest paid corners in the league. You can't argue with them.
And do you know what makes it even better? It's the fact that in the Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals, for me, you've got two leading contenders next season for the NFC Championship. I really think that the Arizona Cardinals have done some good work in personnel and acquiring players in this offseason. They only missed out by a fraction on the playoffs last year.
Yeah, you got to remember the Arizona Cardinals were a 10-win team last year, even though they didn't make the playoffs. So that's going to be interesting. I think that that division is going to be a lot of fun to watch. Moving on to a team that I know you watch a lot, the Dallas Cowboys. Those guys just can't catch a break. Rookie second-round pick defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence, who was going to come in to replace DeMarcus Ware as a pass rusher, broke his foot at practice yesterday, scheduled to miss 8 to 12 weeks, man. How's that going to affect the Cowboys' defense?
I tell you, Steve, it's a hammer blow to the Cowboys. He was the player that the coaching staff, the scouts, Dallas, highlighted to replace DeMarcus Ware, specifically because he could play on the right side of the defensive line. So with him gone now for 12 weeks, and even if it's only 8 weeks, he's missing 8 weeks of preseason training and conditioning. There is no way, once that foot's healed, he goes straight into the starting lineup. He will have to be brought up to speed. He'll be slowly integrated back into the team. He'll play a few snaps to start with on his comeback. Dallas are looking at the end of September, beginning of October, at the earliest, in my opinion, before you see DeMarcus Lawrence playing significant snaps on the field. So, first up, that is a real hammer blow to a defensive side of the ball that, let's be honest, after what they produced or didn't produce last year, anything you'd think has to be better. But when you start losing players that you've traded up for in the second round, gave away a third round pick for, that is not good. That's not the way you want to start training camp.
That's got to hurt the Dallas Cowboys a lot. But the Cowboys tried to make news in other ways, striking an 8-year, $98 million deal with their left tackle, Tyron Smith.
I think it's good money. I think given the way he's played since entering the NFL, he's even in his rookie year when people were predicting he was going to be given a hard time, he stood up and got better and better. It's, from what I hear, the biggest deal that Dallas Cowboys have given a non-quarterback in the franchise's history. That gives you some idea of how highly they rate him and value him as a player. And as part of an offensive line now, which I've got to tell you, Steve, I see as the real strength of this Cowboys outfit. You'll have 3 first-round picks from the last 4 years all starting on this team, because everything I'm hearing from training camp is that Zach Martin is playing lights out. Everybody's impressed with him. I've got no doubt at all he will start at right guard. Travis Frederick goes into his second season having impressed in his rookie year, starting at center, and now you've got Tyron Smith tied up for 10 years. He will be a Dallas Cowboy through to 2023. That all bodes well.
$40 million guarantee there. And let me tell you something, Martin better make up, because he was the one responsible for knocking Sean Lee out for the season, so he better step up and protect Tony Romo.
Hey, did you hear the interview Jerry Jones gave with Rich Eisen on the NFL Network? You remember back in May when the draft came and went, and the question was asked, did you ever think about Johnny Manziel when you took Zach Martin? And there was a united front. No, we did not. Zach Martin was our player all along. We had a strategy. Jerry Jones a few days ago sits down with Rich Eisen, and suddenly the story changes.
As man, I didn't believe
card,
that.
I was that close. That's what he said. I
didn't believe
that
it
close.
For a minute. I never believed him for a minute. I knew that he wanted Manziel. And didn't he go ahead and say that his name was actually on the card? They had to remove his name?
He did. He did. We said at the time, didn't we, when we spoke about this, can you imagine? You saw the picture in the Cowboys war room. Jerry Jones sat on his own, and everybody else just slightly shifting away a little bit in their chairs, all very quiet. Basically, the right men, in my opinion, got their way in picking Zach Martin. But Jerry Jones, you better believe, he was dying to pick Johnny Manziel.
Oh, yeah, it would have made a big splash. All right, we'll move to one more NFL piece of news here before we get to the AFC North. And that is up in the Pacific Northwest, where the Seattle Seahawks still have not seen Marshawn Lynch. He's still a holdout, still wanting more money. What do you think of that, and how is that going to affect Lynch and the Seahawks going forward?
Well, yes, he's holding out, and yes, he wants more money. But it's not like he's not been at the facility. He attended the Seahawks OTAs earlier in the year. He has been seen around the facility since training camp began. He just hasn't trained. So he knows what the playbook is over there in Seattle. And look, go back a few years. Michael Strahan at the Giants. It wasn't uncommon for him towards the end of his career not to immediately attend training camp and miss a few weeks with holdouts or disputes. Yet he turned up, still played lights out, won a Super Bowl with the New York Giants. I wouldn't read anything at all into Marshawn Lynch not being out on the field right now. He is still the number one running back in Seattle. He will still be their workhorse this year. And I've got no doubt whatsoever he'll deliver on the field.
So come September, Thursday night opener against the Green Bay Packers, a rematch of the fail Mary, the touchreception, whatever you want to call it, Marshawn Lynch is running the football for Seattle.
Come the opening night of the season, Thursday in September, Green Bay Packers up there in Seattle, Marshawn Lynch starts at running back for the Seahawks.
All right, I'm gonna hold you to that. Now, I know that Marshawn Lynch, he's a veteran. He's been around this team. He knows the playbook well. And, you know, the last couple of years, he hasn't really played all that much in the preseason. I think last year he got all of 5 carries in the preseason. The year before that, he got all of 4 carries in the preseason. So I understand he doesn't need the work, but doesn't he need to be there for his team during practice?
Look, from what I'm hearing, he has been around the Seahawks facility. It's not like he's held out and not been anywhere near Seattle. That's not the case. He's been around. He just hasn't put the pads on and trained. Now, how much of a smokescreen, if it is he wants to be paid more money? He probably does want to be paid more money. But I think it's a story that interests the media probably a lot more than it interests Marshawn Lynch and the Seattle Seahawks.
All right, kind of like I just want to relax this off season. I don't really want to train all that hard. So let's create this little I'm going to hold out for more money thing. But come the start of the season, I'm right back in there for you guys.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's move on now to teams that I've been talking about already earlier in the show. So I'm going to bring you to it, and we'll start with the Baltimore Ravens. Now, the Baltimore Ravens this offseason has been kind of crazy. They've had 5 players arrested. We know now the league has suspended Ray Rice for 2 games. What do you see of the Baltimore Ravens? Last year, they finished 3rd in the division at 8-8. They didn't make the playoffs. Do they come back? Do they improve? Have they fallen back? Are they the same?
I think they've improved, and I think they'll be better than that record this year. I expect them to make the postseason. I think the addition of a veteran wide receiver in Steve Smith is a good move. From what I'm hearing, Ray Rice has worked hard in the offseason. He's lost a few pounds. So when he comes back after the first 2 games, that'll be an added bonus. But arguably the biggest bonus up there for the Baltimore Ravens, and Joe Flacco in particular, is the return to the fitness of his go-to guy, tight end Dennis Pitta. I think he'll make a huge difference for them. But, you know, the AFC North as a group, you look at how all four teams drafted. And essentially, it's all about the defensive side of the ball. You look at what the Ravens did. First round, they took C.J. Mosley, the inside linebacker out of Alabama. Then in the second round, they drafted Will Eichfeld as well by picking up Timmy Jernigan, the defensive tackle. Many people had a first-round grade on him. And then you look in the third round, again, a safety, Terrence Brooks. So they've looked at what's going on in the AFC North and said, right, we're going to get back now to Ravens football. What has been the motto of the Ravens team? It's always been about having a good, solid defense. And that's what they've gone for this time. And I think they've made a couple of astute decisions and signings on the offensive side of the ball to complement.
Yeah, that's
going to
be interesting. They struggled a lot on defense last year. You know, the interesting, they brought in Gary Kubiak to be the new offensive coordinator. So hopefully that's going to help out Flacco and his decision-making process running that offense. What do you think?
Well, I had to feel for Flacco last year because he'd signed a new mega deal. Everyone had focused on that after he picked up the Super Bowl down there in New Orleans. And then he lost all of his weapons. You know, when Dennis Pitta went out for just about the entire season, injured as well with that hip problem, where was he going to throw the ball? He'd lost Anquan Boldin as well in a bizarre trade to the 49ers for just a sixth-round pick. So I felt that Joe Flacco played a little bit, almost with one arm, figuratively tied behind his back. So I think he'll have a bounce back year this year. I think the signings and the experience of a veteran like Steve Smith will make a big difference.
Okay, so better than 8-8, worse than 8-8, or they'll stay at 8-8?
I think you're looking at a team that could finish as well as 10-6.
Okay. All right, they got a tough schedule. I'm looking at the schedule. It's pretty tough.
Yeah, they have, but like I say, I think they drafted really well. They got some really good players and picked up players with first-round grades on in the lower rounds. I just had a good feeling about them. And of course, like anything else, it's providing they stay reasonably injury-free. If key players stay fit, stay on the field, the Ravens will do well this year.
Yeah, Baltimore, unfortunately for them, without Ray Rice for the first two games on September 7th and September 11th, there's two division games. They play Cincinnati and then Pittsburgh. So Ray Rice will not play in either of those two divisional games. It's going to be interesting. If they come out of those two games 0-2, it might be a long season for Baltimore.
I'll tell you now, if they come out of those two games 1-1, they'll be happy with that. They will take
Absolutely.
That right now, I would have thought.
Absolutely. We'll move on to the Cincinnati Bengals, fresh off their scuffle today during training camp. There was a little fight. One of the players took a shot at A.J. Green. Dude, how can you do that? You're like a second, third string guy. You're going to take a shot at A.J. Green? How does that happen?
Well, you've got to remember, you've got 90 players all at training camp. Only 53 can make that final roster. So you do the math. That's, you know, 47 won't make 37 rather won't make it. So you've got 37 players, maybe 40 that know they're on the fringe, that are all trying to play as hard as they can to prove to the coaches that they should make that final cut. So you see a player like AJ Green, you're an unknown rookie, you wanted to make a name for yourself. I would suggest having a pop at AJ Green is not the way to win over coaching staff. But
yeah,
you know,
I understand there's emotion and you're trying to make a football team, but this is the star on the offensive side of the ball. You don't want to take shots at him, right?
I think you're absolutely right. You know, a prized asset, you want him on the field. So it's always the danger you see at this time of year with unknown guys trying to make a name for themselves, get on a roster. It can happen. And by all accounts, over the last couple of days, tempers have frayed a little bit on the field at the Bengals training camp. So they've got their work cut out up there to try and keep a lid on it. But look, I think above all else as well, there's pressure on this season for the Cincinnati Bengals. And there's pressure on Andy Dalton as well. A lot's been made of the fact that he's able to get this Bengals team to the postseason. A lot more is made of the fact he can't win in it. Now is the year, I feel, when he's got to step up.
So playoffs, and he has to win. Getting to the playoffs is not going to be good enough for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Well, it's certainly not going to be good enough for Andy Dalton. There are enough detractors surrounding him at the moment around his accuracy and whether he's got temperament to handle a big game. and he needs to win them over. The only way you can do that is on the field. I was looking through how they drafted again this year, and again, first round. Is it any surprise when it's a team in the AFC North, they picked up a cornerback, Dakiz Dennard, looking to improve themselves at the back. They also, interestingly, picked up the running back, Jeremy Hill. Now, nobody doubts that Giovanni Bernard is their number one starting man in the backfield. But for those short yardage gains, goal to go situations, Jeremy Hill, I think, is the man they're going to look to try and pound that ball. And that might help Dalton as well with a two-pronged running attack. Might take a little bit of pressure off him.
Yeah, big guy, like 230, 235 pounds there. Jeremy Hill. So that's going to be very interesting. The defensive side of the ball, though, takes a hit immediately as Geno Atkins starts on the pup list. I think they're getting ready to activate him from the pup list, but that's a defense that only gave up 15 points per game last year. Do you think they continue at that pace? And they're going to have to continue at that pace, really, if they're going to want to compete with the likes of the Browns and the Ravens.
Well, we've already spoken, haven't we? The AFC North is a side dominated, is a division rather dominated by defensively strong sides. So if the Cincinnati Bengals want to at least get to where they got to last year, they have to be as good on the defensive side of the ball. Geno Atkins is a huge player for them at the heart of that defensive line. He went down, I think he was in the game down in Miami last year. He was lost for the season. He's still trying to recuperate from that injury. It's how he comes through the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Hold on, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I got some breaking news. This just in, Geno Atkins has been cleared to play and has been activated from the physically unable to perform list. So it looks like that knee injury is all cleared up. He's going to start practicing tomorrow with the team.
Well, that is big news for the Bengals. As I was just saying there, he is the key cog for me in that defensive line. When he went down, without a shadow of a doubt, that Bengals defense lost something last year. Now, we all know how these injuries can be difficult to overcome in that first year. So it's how he comes through that first hit, that first bit of contact he has on the training field. And look, we've just been talking about one of the players having a pop at AJ Green. You better believe that the coaches, when those boys take the field tomorrow, are going to be looking out for Geno Atkins. They don't want him going down, having just got him back up.
Exactly. That's a very good point. All right, before we leave the Cincinnati Bengals, just want to talk, remember, in the fifth round, they did draft out of Alabama A.J. McCarron, a quarterback. So is that a sign to Andy Dalton saying, hey, look, you're our guy, but we're going to take a quarterback that we think can help out and be a backup and be ready to step in if you're not the guy to lead us to the promised land?
I've got to tell you, I think it was a really astute move by the Bengals brass in the draft itself, because AJ McCarron is somebody who's experienced success. I've heard all his doubters say, yes, he was quarterback for the Tide and they had a good team and anybody could have played quarterback and won with that team. Well, that's not necessarily true. You still need a leader to steer the ship. Now, whether there were personality issues, whether AJ McCarron was a difficult guy to get on with, I don't know him and I can't comment on that. What I can tell you is he won football games at collegiate level. His next challenge is to take that and be able to do it on the NFL stage. Whichever way you dress this up, for Andy Dalton, he hears all those people saying, you don't have the temperament to win the big game. And quite frankly, until he manages to win a postseason game, they're all still going to be talking and at times yelling in his ear. And with AJ McCarron being drafted by the Bengals, it is just a gentle nudge to him to say, look, we need a little bit more from you. And if we don't have it, well, who knows, we might have somebody who can step up behind you. So I think it was a really good move. Do I think that AJ McCarron's about to step into Dalton's role? Not a chance this year. It's Andy Dalton's to do with what he likes, but he has got to start winning in the postseason.
All right, final question for the Bengals. They were 11-5. They won the AFC North. Better, worse, or the same?
I think they might be slightly worse. I think they did a little better than anticipated last year. I think the teams around them in their division have got better this time around. I see the Bengals as being around 500, 8-8, 9-7, 7-9 team this time around. They rely too heavily for me on individual players to produce. And by that, I mean players like A.J. Green, one of the stud wide receivers in the NFL. If anything happens to players like him, then I really think that spells trouble for the Bengals. I see them at around 500.
All right. Now, the team that everybody's going to be watching soon on HBO Hard Knocks, the Cleveland Browns, the winners of the Manziel Johnny Football Jackpot. What do you have to say about this team and how they're starting with Hoyer is the guy, not Manziel?
Well, it's going to be a circus that'll run and run. That is for sure. What I found really interesting earlier this week was one of their offensive linemen, Joe Thomas, came out, and he was glowing in his praise of Brian Hoyer.
Just before you came on with me tonight, I actually talked about it. He compared him to Tom Brady. Are you kidding me?
It's high praise indeed, and I don't think even Brian Hoyer himself would have believed it when he read those words. What it does tell me is that there's clearly a split in the camp up there in Cleveland, because there are Brian Hoyer fans, there are Johnny Manziel fans. You better believe that everybody who supports the Cleveland Browns is desperate to see Johnny Manziel in action. Brian Hoyer has only played three games, but he played really well in those three games for the Cleveland Browns, and from what you're hearing at the moment, he is the man in possession of the starting job. You and I talked way back after the draft and said, it's just a smokescreen. I'm beginning to really believe that come September, Hoyer may be the man that takes the field starting at quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. And it cannot be good if you've not got everybody reading from the same page. It may turn around yet. There's still a lot of training camp to go. But at the moment, I do worry for them. And I do worry for what they're going to do with Johnny Football, because he's a polarizing figure, and we haven't seen him throw a single pass yet in the NFL, and all the preseason seems to have been dominated by is what Johnny Football's doing.
Yeah, well, if they don't start Johnny Football and Hoyer comes in, you know, you look at their schedule, the first week they're at Pittsburgh, the week after that they go and they host the New Orleans Saints, who look like they're going to be a really good football team this year. Then after that, in week three, they have the Baltimore Ravens. Then they go on the bye. So conceivably, you know, if Pittsburgh is as good as we think they are, the Ravens, as we talked about earlier, you think they're better than they are, and we know the Saints are going to be good. The Cleveland Browns could start 0-3 going into their bye. Do then you come out of your bye and you say, well, let's go Johnny Football?
Well, I'm going to go on record right now, put my neck on the line, and say the Cleveland Browns will be 0-3 going into their bye week. Because it's not just Johnny Football and Brian Hoyer. It's if no matter which one of those guys starts, who are they going to throw the ball to? Because Josh Gordon isn't going to be there from what we hear. So who is going to score the touchdowns? And I don't see anybody on that offensive side of the ball that makes me think that's where the threat is. And if you've got teams like the Steelers, like the Ravens, that have improved, made a conscious effort on the defensive side of the ball, who's going to scare them? Who's going to force them to back off? Nobody is. So I really do not see how they manage to score enough points to live with teams of that caliber. Defensively, I think the Browns shape up pretty well. But it's difficult to win ball games by 2, 3, 4 points week in, week out. And I don't think the Cleveland Browns have the talent offensively to be able to live with these guys.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I'm this the conspiracy theorist in me starting to come out. When I see Pittsburgh, New Orleans, Baltimore, I'm thinking, well, yeah, of course they're saying we're going to start Hoyer. They don't want to throw Johnny Manziel out there against those three teams to start his career. I would give him the first 3 weeks off, give him the bye week to learn a little bit more, and then you come out October 5th and you go to Tennessee with, hey, we got a new quarterback. His name's Johnny Manziel. Let's go. And you go from there.
And it might be the best thing that Mike Patin can do up there, the head coach at Cleveland. It's the way he's talked ever since the draft back in May. And let's be honest, it's only recently, in recent years, that rookie quarterbacks, no matter where they've been drafted, have been thrown straight in, some with success, some without. But in years gone by in the NFL, you could have been drafted in the first round, you could have been drafted in the seventh, but you would be redshirted that first year. Johnny Football was great at college level. He improvised. He was spectacular at times. I don't think, even now, in the current high-octane, high-speed NFL that we see, I don't think as a quarterback you can go in there and play that brand of football and stay healthy 100% of the time. Look what happened to RG3. Lit up the NFL in the first half of his rookie season, ended up getting injured, and maybe it'll only be this year that we see him back to his best. So if the Cleveland Browns decide to say to Johnny Manziel, look, you are our guy going forward, but this season is where you've got to learn your trade, it might be the best thing that could happen to him.
All right. Last year, the Cleveland Browns finished dead last in the AFC North at 4-12. Do you think they've improved from that, or will they still be cellar dwellers again?
I wouldn't like to hazard a guess at what their final record will be, but I think they'll be dead last in the AFC North. I don't see them this year, especially because I don't see a replacement. I don't see anybody that's going to step up and fill Josh Gordon's shoes and be able to be that deep threat that scares defenses. And with that in mind, I see them finishing rock bottom of this division.
All right, so that's the Cleveland Browns, and that brings us to the final team of the AFC North, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers looking to be that stout defensive team again. What do you like and what do you dislike about Pittsburgh?
Well, I like what they did in the draft, first of all, in looking to bring a bit more speed, get a bit younger on the defensive side of the ball. They picked up Ryan Shazier in the first round out of Ohio State, then took the defensive lineman, Stephen Tuitt, as well. They also, in the backfield on the offensive side of the ball, got themselves some speed. I was impressed with what we saw from Le'Veon Bell when he made his debut at Wembley, came out off that preseason injury, and then impressed for most of the rest of the year. But they picked up the running back, Dre Archer. I don't know if you remember him or not, but he was the guy that said he was going to smash the 40-yard dash record set by Chris Johnson. Didn't quite do it, but I tell you, 4.26 seconds to the 40, that is speed. It is lightning. It gives them a dual threat. So I think they drafted well. I cannot for the life of me see them starting the way they started last year. And even though they went 0-4 into their bye week, they finished the season strong. And let's be honest, but for a fluff call by officials in the Kansas City-San Diego game, we would have been talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers sensationally making the postseason. So they finished well. I see them taking that momentum over to the start of this year, and I see them being better defensively as well. I think Big Ben will lead them as well as he always does. He'll make plays. He'll score touchdowns. He'll win games. So the Pittsburgh Steelers will be better for me this year.
Yeah, well, I think you're on to something, too. I like Archer, the running back they picked up in the draft. I think he's a little small. He's not going to be their every down back because I think he's only like 173 pounds, 5'8". So I think he's going to be their come-in, change of pace back, and should help that a Steelers team that offensively hasn't been able to run the football, and that's been their mantra. We're going to run it down your throat, and then Big Ben will pick you apart in the air. They haven't really had consistency at the running game. Hopefully, Archer can do that for them. I like the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. I think they got a big chip on their shoulder, and I think it starts with the head coach Mike Tomlin, who's pretty much just come out and said, look, I can't just assume that I'm going to keep my job because the Steelers only, have hired three coaches in like the last 60 years or something like that. Like 45 years, they've only had three head coaches. I can't be secure in my job. So I got to start winning football games. He knows that. He's going to instill that to a team that I think is going to try lights out to win good football games for him. I think they're better than the 8-8 that they finished last year. How about you? 8-8, better or worse?
No, I completely agree with what you've just said there. And I think two teams going to the postseason from the AFC North I think the AFC reverts a little bit to type, and we see both the Ravens and Steelers go through from this division this year.
Well, you've been listening to Richard Graves from Sky Sports. Thank you very much for jumping on here and going over the AFC North with me. I really appreciate it. Thank you for not big-timing me after your time with the commissioner of the NFL.
It's a pleasure. Anytime. And can you believe it? We're just 5 or 6 weeks away from regular season NFL football. It seems like it's been an eternity since the Super Bowl in New York, doesn't it?
It does. I cannot wait. I cannot wait. Are you the guy? Tell me you're coming to Arizona this year for the Super Bowl.
All being well, I'm hoping so. I'd love to be there again.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Richard. We'll have you back soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
That was Richard Graves of Sky Sports News. If you haven't seen his work there covering the National Football League, good stuff. That interview with the commissioner, by the way, is online. It's also on Facebook. I'll make the link available. You should check that out, especially if you're in the UK. Roger Goodell had some very interesting things to say about bringing a team within the next decade to London for a London franchise. So that's going to be interesting. And can you imagine that next year, maybe 4, maybe 5 games, regular season games at Wembley? It's crazy. I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to get to 2, much less 3 games this season. But it's coming, folks. The league is serious about putting a team in London, a franchise there. So before I get to my final thoughts, I just want to recap the Baltimore Ravens in the AFC North. For as far as the Ravens are concerned, I think that they're a little worse. Richard thought that they were a little bit better. I think that they're going to struggle still on defense. They're not anywhere near what they were defensively like they were 2 years ago when they beat the San Francisco 49ers in the Super Bowl in New Orleans. So I think they've gone back just a little bit there. And, you know, I'm not sure that they're 8-8 material, to be quite honest. Last year they were 8-8, and they kind of struggled to get to 8-8. This year with the schedule, they have to play the NFC South, which is not going to be a joke, with the Saints, the Falcons, the Carolina Panthers, and even the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in that division aren't going to be an easy out. Especially, you know, now that Tampa Bay looks like they've got their man at the quarterback position, new head coach, and that game is in Tampa Bay. So that's going to be tough. Then on the AFC side, it looks like they're going to play the AFC South. That means the Colts, the Texans, the Titans, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. So Baltimore has their work cut out for it. Of course, they still got to play Cincinnati twice, the Steelers twice, and even the Cleveland Browns twice. So will they be 8-8? It's going to be hard for them to reach that point. I see 6-7 wins in their future. For the Cincinnati Bengals, I actually disagree a little bit with Richard Graves. I do believe Andy Dalton is on notice. I think this is his year. He's got to get 1 or 2 playoff wins under his belt. They got to go a little bit further than get eliminated in the wild card weekend. But I think they win this division again. They were 11-5. I see 12 wins that this team can put up. I think they can roll through the AFC North like they did last year, which means 2 wins against Pittsburgh, 2 wins against Baltimore, 2 wins against Cleveland. If they do that, then you know this division is going to be theirs for the taking. And I think they can do that again. I think they'll win another 11-12 games and win the division and possibly you know, maybe go a little bit further in the playoffs. For the Cleveland Browns, I don't think they're – I mean, I think they're going to be at the bottom again. Richard pointed out a lot of good points. They don't have anyone offensively really that's going to carry the team. There's no one that instills fear on defenses. I mean, if I'm playing defense against the Cleveland Browns and I line up with them, there really is nobody that scares me. And so I think – that's going to put – they're going to see a lot of 8-man fronts. They're going to make Brian Hoyer or Johnny Manziel, whoever is at the quarterback position, beat him throwing the ball. And when you don't have a lot of big-name weapons, you know, I like the tight end, Jordan Cameron. But other than that, not a lot of playmakers, no one that could stretch the field, especially if Josh Gordon has to miss the entire season. Now, you know, with Ray Rice only getting a two-game suspension, maybe Josh Gordon catches a break and only gets a 6 to 8 game suspension somewhere in there. But if the league suspends him for an entire year, which they can per the CBA and you know, the multiple offenses that Gordon has faced, he could be out for the whole year. And if that's the case, then the Browns are really going to be just as bad as they were last year and only win 4 games. Finally, the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is the team that I'm really high on. They were only 8-8 last year. I think they got another two wins in them, putting them at about 9-7, 10-6. If they can do that, they might be able to sneak in to the playoffs. And, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, all they want to do is get into the playoffs. And once they're in there, they become very dangerous. Regardless of what they do with Big Ben and whether they give him a contract now or whether they give him a contract later, I guarantee you that they want to keep Ben Roethlisberger there in Pittsburgh, and they'll try not to make that a distraction. I like Dre Archer there, the running back that they picked up in the third round, and obviously by picking up Truitt and Shahir in the first and second rounds, adding to a defense that's already was already pretty good. They're certainly going to compete in that division strictly because their defense is going to be able to stop some folks. So I think that, you know, you got to remember, the Pittsburgh Steelers only averaged 14 points per game last year. They only scored 2 touchdowns a game. That's it. And I think this offense, it's going to start clicking. Emmanuel Sanders, Antonio Brown, I think they're starting to get really good with Ben Roethlisberger. And, you know, even though they didn't sign Jermichael Finley, I thought they were going to add him at the tight end position. They didn't do that. But I think they're still going to be good enough offensively to score more than 14 points per game. And if they can do that, then they will certainly contend in the AFC North. So that's the preview of those four teams there. But before I go, I want to talk about a Facebook post that I had recently for you all where I said the NFL training camps are finally here. Let me know, people, who you think is a team that could surprise this season and which team is likely to fall flat. Comments came in fast and furious all over the board. The consensus is that a lot of people do not like the Dallas Cowboys this year. And if their defense keeps going down the way they're going down right now, I would agree. But as far as which teams were going to surprise, we had all kinds of answers. People say that the Minnesota Vikings could surprise with Teddy Bridgewater winning the quarterback battle there. Someone says, watch out for the Houston Texans to rebound from a season ago. Someone thinks the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Matthew Phillips, thinks the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are primed to surprise this season. It's simply possible, as they're in a division that usually goes worst to first, and we've seen that happen many years. Let's see. Thomas believes that he's the one that believes the Minnesota Vikings could come out and surprise. He also believes that the Jacksonville Jaguars will surprise. Well, look, Thomas, if you only win 2 games in a season, if you win more than 2 games, you're certainly going to surprise the people. There you go. He thinks, though, and this is going to be a surprise, this is going to be a theme that gets carried on through NFL rants and raves this season. He sees the Seattle Seahawks falling flat. Now, I don't think they're going to pull the Baltimore Ravens and not make the playoffs. They're simply got too much talent all over the football, and Pete Carroll's just a huge competitor up there in Seattle. They're going to make a go at the division again, but with the likes, really seriously, you got to remember that the San Francisco 49ers were right there. They were a play from knocking Seattle out of the playoffs last year, and they battled hard for that division until the very end. The St. Louis Rams were 7-9 last year. Okay, they won 7 games. And they played pretty hard football in that conference. Then the Arizona Cardinals won 10 games. They were 10 and 6, not reaching the playoffs team. And you know, I think they've only gotten better, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So that division really, truly is up for grabs. So I don't know if they'll fall completely flat, but the Seahawks are definitely a team to look for. Then a couple people really think that the Cleveland Browns could surprise. Obviously, those folks are high on Johnny Manziel, and they one person, James Griffin, says Cleveland can surprise with or without Manziel. I don't know about all that. I think we Richard Graves and I kind of showed that they're going to struggle, especially on the offensive side of the ball, if Josh Gordon gets suspended for the entire year. I'm going to give you my two teams to look at. Of course, Greg Campbell, he thinks the Buffalo Bills will surprise, but, that's just Greg Campbell being a Buffalo Bills guy. And that's okay, too. Here's my team I think is going to surprise, and it might come out of left field, right field, wherever the field is things come out of. But I say look for the Oakland Raiders. Last year, Oakland was 4-12, but they were in some games. And I think Matt Schaub is a huge improvement over anybody that the Oakland Raiders had at the quarterback position over the last several years. Put Matt Schaub in a good situation. They've surrounded him with some pretty good talent. If they can keep Darren McFadden healthy and he can contribute and take some pressure off of Schaub, and Schaub only has to make those short to medium throws, watch out for the Oakland Raiders. They will possibly be a thorn in the side of the Denver Broncos and the Kansas City Chiefs. A team that I think will come back down to earth is those very own Kansas City Chiefs. They were 11-5 last year, primarily because they got off to that 9-0 start where they beat nobody that had a winning record. All right, and I said when they were 9-0, they're going to lose 5 out of their next 7 and finish 11-5. That's exactly what happened. And then they took this great big lead over Indianapolis in the playoffs and squandered it and lost and got knocked in the first round. I don't think the Kansas City Chiefs win nearly as many games as they did last year, and that's, I'll talk about that a little bit more when I preview the AFC West, which is in a couple weeks. Up next, I've got the AFC South. I'll talk about the Colts, Titans, Jaguars, and Houston Texans. But for now, I'm Stephen Miranda. This has been NFL Rants and Raves, and I'm out.